Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Eglin is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown. Brian Burns to the house.
And it is caught for the touchdown by Moore.
And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. One, two, three.
Keep pounding.
And welcome to another episode of The Roar Podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire. My name is Billy Marshall, and today, to help me review Carolina's 2021 draft class, we are joined by the one and only Emery Hunt. Does an excellent job covering the draft. He is the owner of Football Game Plan, and he also does draft work for CBS Sports HQ. Emery, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Billy. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Yeah, and you know, you and I have been, you know, we've gone through Twitter, we've met through it, and I think we've had a ton of conversations for so many years. So this is the first time I think you and I are speaking one-on-one, and I value you, your opinion so much, because I definitely know that you put in the work. If any of you haven't had a chance yet, it's not too late. You can still order his draft guide, where you can find it on his Twitter page. Go to Football Game Plan. It's somewhere on there. But, you know, Emery, this draft class for Carolina, and before I actually get into the draft class, there is one thing that I kind of want to address, because I've been seeing it percolate in different areas as far as like reviewing Carolina's draft. And I would argue that maybe 75 to 80% of our listeners and maybe 65 to 70% of Panther fans in general would agree that Justin Fields is a better player and passer than Sam Darnold. I don't think we won't have a debate about that, but I think in your eyes, do you think it's possible to separate the trade for Sam Darnold and the approach Carolina took in the draft?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, once they let it be known that when they traded all those assets for Sam Darnold, it kind of let it be known that they were going to be out of the QB market in the first round. Mm-hmm. And they still feel comfortable with, you know, PJ Walker, who stepped in and started a game and won a game for him last year. And they still have a young player in Will Greer. So they felt as though, you know, they can, you know, hold court at quarterback. So it would have been a waste of draft capital had they chosen Justin Fields there, despite knowing he is the better player. Like, if I was Giants fans, I would be more upset at them passing on Justin Fields as opposed to, you know, the Panthers passing on him. You know, the Panthers just gave up a lot of picks for Sam Darnold. And they also said they're going to pick up, you know, his fifth year option. So you knew they wasn't taking a quarterback regardless of who was there.
Yeah, I think you certainly make a lot of great points. Like, if what Carolina did was take the approach that Denver or the Giants took, they just invested a sixth round pick in Teddy Bridgewater, and the Giants, again, they didn't really do anything. So I certainly understand, you know, how some people take it. I just feel like, and again, you don't have to agree, the investment that they made in Sam Darnold with all those picks is essentially a late first rounder. And I mean, this team, just looking coming into this draft, it was not a good roster. But I think that this weekend, it really helped them kind of continually build their roster moving forward. And I want to start off with J.C. Horn. And, you know, early last week before the draft, we started hearing smoke about J.C. Horn potentially being the first defensive player. And there were some rumors that Carolina could be interested. So that's kind of like when I first knew, like, this was a real possibility. But why don't we get your thoughts on just J.C. Horn and his fit into the NFL?
No, he's exactly what they want at the position. He's athletic. He's aggressive. He can tackle. He has ball skills. He can play press. You know, he does a good job in driving on the ball. So his closing speed to the ball and to the receiver is impressive. So everything you like about the cornerback position, he can do it and do it really well. So it's a no-brainer. Again, if you're talking about, there's like four corners in this draft that if you told me you were going to go with this guy over that guy, I wouldn't have argued with you, because they all have those same qualities to really, you know, pressure the ball, play press, you know, run with anybody on the field and turn the ball over. So, I mean, Horn to me was a slam dunk.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And I've seen, again, some post-hoc analysis discussing that, you know, Carolina is a zone-heavy team, and they were last year, but I think that was just because of the personnel. If anyone watched Baylor under Phil Snow in from 2017, 2019, they like to play a lot of men and get their guys at the line of scrimmage to really disrupt. And while I also have a very high opinion on Patrick Surtain, I just felt that the upside with Horn is a lot greater. So let's go into day two. And this is kind of where Carolina really established their mark, in my opinion. And again, they didn't really have many picks going into it. They had, I think, seven, and they might have been eight after the Bridgewater trade. But a couple trade downs, and they were able to land a guy that I really liked, LSU wide receiver Terrace Marshall. He's, I think, one of the youngest prospects in this class. Still only 20 years old. I mean, his analytics look good. I know the fantasy community likes him, likes his projections. What do you see from him on the field?
I think he's a really good, you know, run after catch guy. It's kind of in the mold of Justin Jefferson in a sense that, you know, once he gets the ball in his hands, he's looking to score. And so those type of receivers are always valuable because they tend to help out your offense, help your quarterback out. You don't have to really scheme things up for him to get deep down the field. You know, he can take one of those little short passes or a little short intermediate route and take that thing to the house. So his injury concerns are, you know, he's always banged up. It was not really serious. It was just something that was just always nagging with him. Mm-hmm. So if he can overcome that, that'll be a huge plus for Carolina. But man, he's definitely, you know, one of these guys that you want with the ball in his hands. And it just helps round out that offense, because you assume that he's going to be the number three option in the passing game. And because he's number three and he has the skills of a number one, that's going to be the optimal matchup on game day, when you consider teams don't normally have three excellent cover corners. There's always one drop off, and I'm pretty sure they're going to try to match up Marshall on that drop off and let him do work.
Yeah, I mean, he was a number three in their offense the year they won the national title. I believe they had Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, and obviously we know Joe Brady was the coordinator for that unit. And you know, the next two picks on day three, one of them was a small trade up for left tackle prospect Brady Christensen. I don't know if he's going to play there in the NFL. The arm length is a little bit of a concern. And they also were able to grab Tommy Tremble in the third round. before they traded back a third time with Houston. But let me get your thoughts here on these two players they took in the third round. Again, I'm personally a little more optimistic on Christensen. I know the short arms can scare people, but where do you see him?
He was my number three offensive tackle. So I had a high grade on Christensen. When you watch BYU, everyone focused on Zach Wilson, but they missed the fact that there were three NFL offensive linemen right there up front doing a great job keeping him well protected. And Christensen was just stonewalling guys. And when you watch the biggest games, you know, I watched the UCF game. They have athletes on the on their D-line. Coastal Carolina, we know, has a guy that got drafted in Teron Jackson with the Eagles. Mm-hmm. La Tech always has some dogs up front. Milton Williams gets drafted by the Eagles. So you're watching him go against pro competition and, you know, good athletes, and he was able to hold his own. I just think that his footwork and his hand usage was outstanding. I mean, this dude, he was impressive on tape. So the fact that he, you know, fell to the third round to me is just a huge value pick for Carolina. And Tremble was my number one H-back. So, you know, I think his upside is tremendous, because he, every time he touched the ball at Notre Dame, you saw the explosiveness, you saw the potential. This dude could be a Jordan Reed type at the next level. And he wasn't utilized like one. And I think he gives Carolina a legitimate option at that tight end position, because you can put him on the move. He's a great blocker. And once he has the ball in his hands, he turns into almost like a running back in, with how he's able to run through, you know, potential tacklers and run by people. I just think that was one of the more underrated prospects in the draft class. And it was just amazing that, so far, going into round three, Carolina was just knocking things out the park with their picks.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that the move tight end portion for Tremble, because John mentioned on one of our recent episodes that I think he heard from someone on the team that they see him similarly to Richie Brockle. You know, he was more of that move tight end for this team. Yeah, I think he played in the mid-2000s and played a couple of seasons with Cam Newton. And I think what we used to call it in Carolina is like the Richie Brockle role, which, again, H-back, sometimes he said that was aligns as a fullback, similar to, I guess, what Chris Cooley did for Washington for a few seasons, if anyone remembers him. But let me just, before we wrap up here on day two of the draft, what do you think of their approach, accumulating picks and attacking these positions? Would there have been anything different that you would have done?
No, not one bit. I mean, you think about when you look at the draft and look at, you know, rosters, you have to look at it in a 2-year time frame. So you look at what they've added juxtaposed to what they drafted last year. And it's like, all right, so I'm starting to see things, how it's fitting. You know, you got guys who drafted last year that were really solid. And now those guys will be, you know, more acclimated to the system. You know, I was a big fan of Troy Pride when he came out of Notre Dame. And you add more players to the secondary, and you expect Pride and Chin to really take that next step. And it starts to come together. Derek Brown was a first-round pick. You expect him to, you know, take the next step. And so now you add these talented guys, and it's really starting to, you know, formulate a solid two deep. And I think that's just exciting to see when it all plays out. I think a lot of times folks look at the draft in terms of, you know, the 1 year, but it's really a 2 to 3 year process of accumulation of talent. And with the roster was, you know, had talented pieces, but now I think it has gone from, you know, talented pieces to what is now can be considered a talented roster. Cause I love the two deep right now for Carolina.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. And this is the approach they took in free agency. They didn't really go out there and sign anyone to a big long-term deal. You know, Hassan Reddick, Morgan Fox, those guys, AJ Boye, they were signed to like 1 or 2 year deals. So it kind of just helps, you know, having the established veterans on the roster and adding these rookies that you've taken day one and day two to really just push for competition. Now, certainly you hope that Marshall and Horn are day one starters, and I think they will be, but a Tremble or a Christensen, just adding to that competition, that's exactly what you want, especially for a young team.
Yeah, and especially when you think about, you know, where you made a trade for Sam Darnold, and you want to make sure you get the most out of most return for that investment. So it makes sense to, you know, stockpile stuff on offense. You could have done the approach of keeping Teddy Bridgewater and doing the same thing, you know. So it just kind of, it's no matter which way they played it, you know, with at quarterback, they still were able to, you know, make the offense better. Even though I don't think the offense was a problem more so than the play calling, in my opinion, especially inside the red zone. But adding weapons around Sam Darnold is a much better makeup here than it was in New York. So you should be able to see if he can play. Now, the question for Darnold is not talent. This dude can't stay healthy. So you hope that he can stay out there for a full 17-game season, because what I noticed out here was, you know, this was a guy that started to build momentum in a positive direction, and then he gets hurt. So now you have to reset, and then he'll have to, you know, start back again. And just was one thing after another. So he never really was able to string together a full season and work toward that progress like you see normal rookie quarterbacks and second-year players do. It was always having to hit reset because of injury. So now what looks to be a much better offensive line, you know, three talented wide receivers, some good move pieces, you know, at tight end and H-back, and a dynamic run game, a healthy Christian McCaffrey. It should be set up for him to step in and let's see if he could reach that potential. Otherwise, you know, next year with a better roster, you'll be looking at the quarterback market if, you know, whatever that is in 2022.
Yeah, certainly. And I'll ask you again about Darnold after we go over some of these late round picks, because I know you do cover both New York teams living up there in the tri-state area. Let's go to the fourth and fifth round. And again, Carolina trades back fourth time, and they were able to land Oklahoma State running back Chuba Hubbard. I was a huge fan of him in 2019. And even during the phone call, Matt Rhule mentioned how much of a pain he was, and you know, his Baylor teams had so much trouble stopping him. He just looks so much more explosive. And I think last year, I mean, it was just so much impacted with COVID. And I think him and Gundy had some issues off the field or whatever. And then obviously I think he had some ankle problems. But I'm a pretty big fan of him personally. I think that when Carolina lost Mike Davis, who did really well replacing McCaffrey, this made sense, taking a chance on a running back in the fourth round. This is an area of the draft where, you know, I like to kind of invest in that position.
I mean, it adds more explosiveness. You think about Hubbard, you think about Trent Cannon, you know, those are guys that could really run. And so adding someone like Hubbard that, you know, I don't think Hubbard is the type of guy that needs volume. He won't get volume anyway with McCaffrey out there healthy. But the fact of the matter is you don't lose much when you have to give McCaffrey a breather. You got a guy like Hubbard that has carried the load, that knows what it takes to be a starting tailback, but also has that explosive home run hitting speed that McCaffrey has. And, you know, now you can get creative with how you utilize him in the backfield. You may even see both in the backfield at the same time, you know, so it just helps them out. You know, at worst, it can help out their return game if they want to throw two kickoff returners back there with Cannon and Hubbard. But, you know, you do gain a lot of flexibility and versatility with a guy like Chuba Hubbard. He may not be the back that you know, he was projected to be, but in a complementary role, especially in this situation, I think he could thrive.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's go to the fifth round. They took two players. My favorite player that they took in the draft, Iowa defensive tackle, Davion Nixon. Carolina really didn't have like a three tech on the roster. Morgan Fox, I guess, is one guy. But if you just look at their other defensive tackles, like Derek Brown, Bravion Roy, and Daquan Jones, are more like your traditional like one tech run stuffers. And that's no slight against them. They're good players. But they needed more pass rush from the interior. And I think that Nixon provides that. And the other player they took in the fifth round was Keith Taylor, the cornerback from Washington. He's a really long, lanky guy. Doesn't really have the arm length, but he comes from a system where they do a lot of press coverage. I sort of saw him a little similarly to Troy Pride. I think there might be some differences, but what'd you think about both of these fifth round picks?
Yeah, Nixon was my number one defensive tackle.
Ahead of Barmore.
Ahead of Barmore, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think when folks watch Bama, you know, they kind of get the Bama bump. but, you know, there's Bama, you know, like me and a coaching friend always talk about this. Like, you know, there are no 18 and 19 year olds in the NFL. And so when you get some Bama guys that go up against guys that are of the same strength level, then talent has to, you know, take over. And sometimes these guys just don't be as talented as it is made out to be. They just be better than the dudes they're going up against in college. But that's not a knock on Barmore. Nixon was just outstanding on tape, you know, and consistently making, you know, the guard look foolish. He's able to get off blocks. He's quick off the ball. He's so disruptive. And I think when you watch someone that's consistently doing what he's great at, it kind of just stands out clearly on tape. You know, you don't have to watch to find where he's able to win or where he's able to have success. It finds you. And so, you know, getting him in the fifth round, obviously he dropped for whatever reason, but getting him in the fifth round was a steal. And Taylor is another one of these guys. You can always sell me on, you know, sight unseen. You could sell me on a Washington defensive back or a San Diego State defensive back. I don't even have to see the tape. You just tell me, oh, these dudes from Washington, sign them, get them, draft them. I don't care. Because I know how they're coached. I know how they play. I know they can find the ball. I know they are good, active players. And I know they're going to be productive pros. Like a guy like Taylor is sort of similar to Cam Bynum. Maybe not the same type of, you know, athleticism or ball skills, but same type of wiry frame, gets in the way, you know, just does a good solid job of playing a position. And I really like how he may not have the length, but he plays with length. And that's something that really frustrates, you know, wide receivers. He just kind of gets in the way, you know, almost sort of like Metroid out there on the field. So
right.
I just like the way he plays, man. And again, we're talking about fifth round picks that I felt like they knocked it out the park. And some teams didn't find two defensive players like these two guys in earlier rounds. So Carolina is at this juncture is still knocking, you know, balls out the park.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I was really impressed. So now as we wrap up the draft, we'll go into our sixth and seventh round selections. Deonte Brown, a guy that fell for, I think he fell for notable reasons. I think the weight is an issue. I mean, there were reports of him showing up to Tuscaloosa at 375. I don't know. I read somewhere that he showed up 350 at the Senior Bowl. I'm not sure. Can you confirm that?
Yeah, I have him at 6'4", 350.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a little heavy. Pretty big. But yeah, so I guess it makes sense as to why he dropped, but I still think taking a chance is not the worst thing in the world. And then Shai Smith, the receiver from South Carolina, I'm a pretty big fan of his. I think he has potential to be there long term, or at least compete at kick returner and maybe wide receiver 4 or 5. And then they took the long snapper from Alabama, Thomas Fletcher. And then to round it out, they took a defensive tackle from Kentucky, Phil Hoskins. Now, I'm pretty familiar with, I would say, 2 out of 4 of those guys, Brown and Shai Smith. I'm not going to ask you about the long snapper, but what can you tell us about this defensive tackle from Kentucky?
It's funny. When you watch Kentucky play, they were outstanding up front. There were 3 defensive linemen that, you know, Kentucky had go in the draft. And it was, you know, you just watched them stop the run, and they were awesome. You know, he has, I wrote in my notes, he has potential as a one-gap penetrator. He's quick off the ball. He's active with his hands. And he was really solid. You go back and watch the UGA game, and you know Georgia, you know, was trying to run on these guys. So they still had homeboy at quarterback, Stetson Bennett. And so they really wasn't trying to let Stetson Bennett throw much. But you watch how Hoskins and the rest of his teammates were working up front along that offensive line. So I think he's a good depth player, someone that could be a disruptive player that you want to throw into a rotation. I see him as someone that's going to make the team, you know. I think he's that good a player, you know, because, again, it's hard to find big dudes that can move like that. And he's legitimately 6'5", 315, and with some quickness with him, knows how to anchor and play the run game. So where he has to get better is just kind of working off double teams. Like, he'll try to get too cute at times. But you know, sometimes when he's playing upfield, and you know, when he's trying to be an aggressive gap filler, that's where he has success.
It's good to hear. I really didn't know much about him. I tried to look up a couple of draft guides. I know yours had something on him, but I'm very encouraged to hear that Carolina's defensive line rotation, it was not deep last year. They were throwing out undrafted free agents and late round guys. So that's, again, just adding to the competition is very encouraging. But, you know, undrafted free agency, they signed some guys that people might know, like Patty Fisher from Northwestern. I'm not really too high on him, and they signed a punter. But, you know, I got to ask you about my guy, David Moore, because I mean, you do a really good job covering the small schools, particularly the HBCUs. When I saw him at the Senior Bowl, I mean, this guy was stonewalling like guys like Boogie Basham and some of the best players there. What are your overall impressions, and just what can you tell, you know, our listeners about David Moore that hasn't already been said?
He has really good point of attack strength, and it's funny because he gets down to the Senior Bowl and they have the weigh-in first, and you see 6'1", 350, you're like, damn, like, you know, that's not good. But then you see him out there on the field and he's carrying it well. You're like, geez, he looks like he's about 320. And I know that he went back down to like 330 or 320. So that's probably why he ended up undrafted, because folks had, well, is he 350 or is he going to be 320? I think he could be a center at the pro level as well. He really did a good job blocking out on a perimeter against Milt Williams when you watched a La Tech game from 2019. He did a good job against UL Monroe. You know, that's another team that has a lot of speed, athleticism up front. If you're looking for some, FBS games for him to go up against, Southern has a really good defensive line that does a good job in pressuring. You know, they got a guy that's, you know, was up for the Buck Buchanan this year, had like 10 and a half or 13 sacks in the spring. So he's doing a good job. And, you know, obviously he doesn't have the longest arm. So that to me yields itself to him playing more inside as a center, but you know, you're not going to move him off the spot. Like I really would like to see him in one-on-one with someone like Tyler Shelvin. You know, that I just think that's like two sumo wrestlers, you know, just like no one's moving nowhere. Because that's how strong and stout at the point of attack they are. And he does a good job of finishing, which helps, because that keeps you in the fight. So despite not having long arms, despite his weight fluctuating, you know, he doesn't play sloppy. He plays like an NFL lineman. He has good NFL, I believe, athleticism.
I'm so happy to hear that. I'm a big fan of his, and I was surprised that he went undrafted. And kudos to Carolina scouting staff and whoever else had to put in a decent signing bonus to get him to come here, because I think he really has a good chance to make the roster. And you know what? I even said on the podcast that I think he has a better chance of making the roster, or at least not better chance of making the roster, but I think he has a better chance of starting over Deontay Brown in the future. Now we'll see if that comes to fruition, but you know, Emmer, you do such a good job of covering the draft, and you have such a huge database of these prospects, but before I do let you go, give us some under the radar names that fans might be interested in, specifically at the quarterback position. Again, most of us are a little skeptical of Sam Darnold, as you'd expect. But we've seen guys like Zach Wilson, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, Joe Burrow, these guys who come out of nowhere, not necessarily nowhere, but we don't expect number one picks or number two overall picks. Are there any like under the radar quarterbacks that you see in this upcoming season who could kind of separate themselves? I know one guy is the guy from Liberty. His name is kind of escaping me, but is there anyone else that kind of stands out to you?
Yeah. Malik Willis is a guy from Liberty.
Yeah. There you go.
And if you're looking at someone like, I was watching Cal and I kind of like how Chase Garbers play. And then you got Jason Brown, who transferred from St. Francis to South Carolina. And, you know, he literally can throw the football a country mile. So expect him to have some suitors or maybe be a late round pick. But, you know, I think Malik Willis would be a guy. Alabama A&M has a quarterback in a Quill Glass who can play. I just think that he still needs to work on getting stronger. You know, Alabama A&M lists him as like 6'4", 230. But he's really probably 6'2", 205. So if he gets up to about, you know, 225 and really thickens out and hardens up his body with the way he's able to throw the football, he could be the next HBCU quarterback getting drafted. So those are some players. Levi Lewis is another one I like. You know, he's kind of like PJ Walker, you know, just a point guard, you know, you know, just point and shoot type player that, you know, scramble, can run. He's from University of Louisiana, so seen a lot of his game. And, you know, he's a left-hander, and he's just an excellent football player. And, you know, so sometimes you get those guys, and it's all about which year the league decides that size is not a skill. You know, next year it may be, oh, we want 6'4", 230 guys. Then the following year it's like, oh, yeah, we got this guy that's 5'9", and can play. You know, so it all depends on which year the league decides they are all in on, you know, the smallest quarterbacks, because those guys, I believe, can play, especially Levi Lewis. But you kind of have that on the roster, I believe, already in PJ Walker.
Yeah, it's going to be fun watching PJ play the preseason. Knock on wood, hopefully there's some preseason games.
It wouldn't surprise me to see him look better than Sam Darnold, because if we're going back to, like, if I'm going back to my scouting grades, like the 2018 class, I had Lamar Jackson as my number one QB with a 90 grade. So I had that's an all pro grade. My number two quarterback that year was Sam Darnold with a 79.5. You know, I kind of liked the upside. You know, he has some talent. I compared him to Tony Romo. But I go back to the 2017 class, and PJ Walker was my number four or five quarterback. Behind, I had, it was Deshaun Watson, Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Kaiser, and then four, it was PJ Walker with an 85 grade. And so I was a big fan of PJ Walker coming out of Temple. And so I think just from a talent perspective, he's better than Sam Darnold, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get the opportunity to play that, to start over Sam Darnold. They're going to give Sam Darnold every opportunity to win the starting job. And if he doesn't win it, he's still going to win the starting job, you know, because it's an investment. And so they got to make right on that investment. But keep an eye on PJ Walker, man, like full off season with the preseason, knock on wood, like you said. And, you know, he already has some fans in the building, you know, with the head coach. You know, Bryant was at Temple. You know, Vintel Bryant, his, you know, one of the guys, Thompson was at Temple with them. So he has some, you know, some people in that building that he could kind of get some run with in the preseason, especially if you're looking at the back end of the roster, and guys like him tend to wow in the preseason because of his ability. But it'll make things interesting. I think that competition should make Sam Darnold bring out the best in his game. So it should be probably a more stable, you know, quarterback position battle this season. That's why I love the preseason, because it's going to let these guys really get out there and get those live game reps.
I'm totally with you. I also love the preseason. I'm glad you mentioned that you also, I also had Lamar 1 and Darnold 2 in 2018. And obviously for, I mean, you and I were vindicated on Lamar Jackson, but, you know, Darnold has been a little disappointing. And again, I just feel like, to me at least, and this is kind of like a broader conversation about quarterback play in general, and I don't want to keep too much of your time, I'll just end with this, is I do think situation matters in some respects. And I'm not trying to absolve Darnold's performances the past 2 to 3 years, because they weren't good even when he was given ideal circumstances. But I do think that situation matters. And I know, like, maybe some of the analytics people are going to disagree with me in that respect, but for quarterbacks, I think it's really paramount, because so much of playing quarterback is determined by the situation you're around. And I mean, just let's just do a hypothetical. Like, would Josh Allen be this good if he went to New York and Darnold was in Buffalo? Like, I don't really know. And that's the thing. So there's just a lot of nuances and things that go into it. And again, I think Darnold has a lot to prove, and I'm not by any means defending him or trying to justify the trade or any of that respect, but I just want to put that out there that I think situation and surrounding talent is a bigger part of the conversation than people want to admit.
You know, that's an excellent point, because another case study running sidecar to Darnold in Carolina will be Dwayne Haskins in Pittsburgh, you know?
Yeah.
And so you look at getting drafted to a situation where they didn't want you, then the you know, constantly looking over your shoulder, changing of the OCs, and now you go to a situation in Pittsburgh where we've seen them have patience with virtually everybody from players to coaches. So if he can't go out there and whatever reps he gets in the preseason and look like the Haskins that we saw at Ohio State, then you know it's on him. And I think situation does dictate. You can go back to a guy like DeShone Kizer. If DeShone Kizer goes back to the Cleveland in his second season, when they add a Nick Chubb, when they add a Odell Beckham, does his situation change? You know, does he get the opportunity to be improved? So we'll never know. And so I think that's why, you know, watching how Darnold, Haskins, and wherever, you know, Drew Locke ends up, because I still think Drew Locke has talent. And I'm glad Denver, as of now, are not pulling the plug, because you've got to let these young guys play. And I just want to see how that works out for those three guys, because I think, well, you know, Locke has a ton of talent, you know, at receiver and at tight end at his disposal. It's really up to Locke. But I'm interested to see how Darnold does and Haskins do, because the talent, obviously, you just don't lose talent, and you just don't become, you know, garbage in the NFL from, you know, the talent that you had in college. So you're absolutely right about situation. And these two situations, I believe, are going to be telling to that theory.
Yeah, and this is pretty much it for Darnold. I mean, Josh Rosen, unfortunately for him, he had a chance in Miami after his rookie season. It didn't go work out for him, and I think this is not necessarily a make or break, but I'm very, given how this organization, this front office, this coaching staff is quick to pull the trigger on quarterbacks who don't perform, it's essentially a one-year trial for Darnold. But I do think that the surrounding talent on offense and defense, for that matter,
right,
should elevate the offense as a whole, and hopefully Darnold can do his job. But hey, Emery, I really appreciate you coming on. And again, everyone, if you want to go to footballgameplan.com, you can still order his draft guide. Tons of information, and I think he does a ton of work. He puts in the work 365 days a year, and you could also follow him on Twitter at FBALL gameplan, at FBALL gameplan. Emery, thanks again for joining.
Appreciate you, Billy.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.